And they're really dependencies in three different senses. Architecturally, they're dependencies in the sense that they balance the main larger structure and offset it, pointing out its monumental and important and imposing presence. They're also dependent in another sense, in that these are the outbuildings that serve the great house. They're where the kitchen facilities may be. And of course, they're dependent in a third sense, most importantly, and symbolically as well. That is where the dependents of the master reside. Right? And this would be true not only in Virginia houses, but in English houses as well. In fact, that's one of the goals of placing these dependencies there, is to show all visitors, this is my social hierarchy, these are my dependents. Well, this is an idiom that Jefferson outright rejects. Jefferson is the champion of independence. He's a foe of slavery, and he doesn't want its presence to mar his beautiful and magnificent architectural achievements. So as we approach Monticello from the east, we see no dependencies at all. And I think there's a very important symbolism there. Jefferson is overcoming dependency through eliminating it, at least symbolically. But he can't do that entirely. Actually, the dependencies are in the back of the house. If we look at the original plan again, you see that they run in a L-shaped sort of U all the way back into the garden facade, or into the garden. Yet even there, he uses the sloping terrain of the garden to obscure our vision of these dependencies, and further obscures that vision by rows of trees planted in front of them. And if we approach the dependencies from the garden, what we see are in fact fairly innocuous things. We see storage and cooking facilities. We see a smokehouse. We see a kitchen. It's only if we walk around the structure to the sides that the dependencies become truly and fully visible. And even then, we must enter them to discover the great illusion of the house. For there are slave quarters. They're just not visible from the outside. They're built into the foundations of the structure itself. And now, part of this is a drawing on, again, Roman precedents, for Romans like to have these underground passages in their villas. But part of it also, I think, is Jefferson trying to obscure our vision of the reality of dependency and slavery. But in removing the vision of dependency, he has in fact made slavery the foundation of his very structure. And I think that's symbolic for the nation. Jefferson may not have intended that, but I've always believed you trust the poem and not the poet. And a great artist, as I think Jefferson truly is, can't help but express insights that he may not have even intended. And I think if we look at the tension here between Jefferson's optimistic idealism and the realities of his life, they are in fact symbolic of the American political experience. We soar between high and lofty ideals and catchpenny realities. Well, what does this tell us about Jefferson? Some might look at this and say, Jefferson is a deceitful man. Jefferson is lying to himself and lying to us. I think that's a misreading of Jefferson. I think we're holding Jefferson up to a standard that is not accurate and that is not fair. To read Jefferson as a political philosopher or a sage is to misread the man. Jefferson was fundamentally an artist. And his architecture proves that. His draftsmanship proves that. Even his philosophical tastes prove that. The eclecticism we've remarked, the fact that he is not particularly systematic. He creates a collage and a visionary effect which is stunning and overwhelming, but is not always coherent and consistent. And that is why we always return to Jefferson, why he's so inspiring. Because he is, in fact, the prose poet of American democracy. He's the prose poet of the American vision and of the American dream. And like all great poets, his story is conflicted. Conflicted between, on the one hand, the goal of independence, the goal of freedom and justice for all, the goal of limited government, and the goal of a fundamental harmony which is in keeping with natural law, one expressed in the perfect symmetries and orderly disposition of his own home and its intimate relationship with its natural surroundings. At the same time, there's another side of this legacy, that built into the foundations, the realities which underlay this vision and in some ways betray it. And so when we return to Jefferson, we have to keep in mind that tension. And it's that tension which not only informs his career, but informs the American political, cultural, and social tradition. It's that tradition with which we deal with today. If we need to honor Jefferson, we must treat him as an artist, transcending his limitations and honoring his vision.
I'm Tom Rollins, president of the Teaching Company. I hope you've enjoyed these lectures from our Great Courses on Tape series. To find out about other Teaching Company courses taught by Professor Staloff, or about our selection of other courses, please call our customer relations representatives at 1-800-TEACH-12. That number again is 1-800-832-2412.